Colonial Man by Hugh Masekela. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. This week we'll be talking about Marcus Garvey, the homeless of Skid Row, and a live in-studio performance by the actor, singer, Mr. Isaac Clay. Also, a sounding off open mic by Mr. Lee Shaw talking about poverty pimps, and a monologue by Miss Earlene Anthony about the homeless entitled Auto Head. We also have on the line the great gospel singer Jamila with us on the phone. How you doing, Jamila? Jamila?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing, Jamila?
I'm doing good.
Okay. Look, you'll be performing at the Gospel Brunch this Sunday at the Exchange. Tell us a little about that.
Well, this Sunday we're having a Gospel Brunch at the Exchange, and we're really looking forward to having a great turnout. We just want to lift up the name of Jesus and bless the people. We, you know, our goal is to encourage and to give people joy and a new sense of hope in the Lord.
Oh, that's great. Now, Jamila, let me ask you something. How would you define gospel music?
Okay. Well, the word gospel, and that word itself over the ages has come to be known as the good news. But gospel music is a way of expressing the hope of salvation for all mankind through Jesus Christ. We know that we live in a fallen world where many tragic and even devastating and sometimes unexplainable things happen. And especially at this time and at this hour, we know that people, in many cases, have lost their sense of purpose and faith. But when we speak of the gospel, what we're saying to each and every person worldwide is that God, the one true and living God, manifested himself in the flesh as Jesus Christ and came to save this fallen world that we might live with him eternally.
Okay.
And not just to live in et- eternally, but in this life, more abundantly.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Now, Jamila, what is the name of the song that that we're going to hear?
Well, this song is called Jesus, I Want You to Know.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, this song was written between three people, my brother, myself, and another gentleman named Lawrence Jones. And it's a love song to Jesus. It's just a way of saying, thank you, Jesus, for dying for me on the cross, for saving me and giving me that peace that that we can't find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Jamila. Now, at this time, we're going to go to that song, Jesus, I Want You to Know.
Okay.
That I can win. You washed away my sins, and how precious you are. I praise you. And all that I have, He's given me, giving back to the world. All that I cherish most, love, joy, and hope. Don't
I Praise You by the great gospel singer Jamila. And she will be performing at the Gospel Brunch this Sunday, August the 14th at 1 o'clock. She'll be going on about 2:15 at the Exchange, which is located at 114 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles. Now I would like to turn it over to Ms. Earlene Anthony for the community calendar.
This is the community calendar for some of the upcoming events in the month of August. Tuesday, August the 9th, 6:30 p.m., D-Link, Downtown Los Angeles Neighborhood Council will be having their monthly board meeting. The location is the Los Angeles Theater, 615 South Broadway, and all are welcome to attend. This Thursday, August the 11th, will be the Arts Walk from 4 to 10 p.m. And this is a monthly tradition, a self-guided tour of art galleries. And it's actually the feel of a street carnival. And it's the best people watching in all of downtown Los Angeles. And this is held every second Thursday of the month. Drama Stage Cool Run presents on Sunday, August the 14th, 1 p.m. at the Exchange. Gospel Brunch, featuring the gifted musical talent of Jamila. Admission will be $10. The Exchange is located at 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. Parking is available at 530 South Spring Street. For more information on this event, you can call 323-850-4436. Drama Stage Coon Run is presenting on Sunday, August the 21st at 4 p.m., also at the Exchange. Performance of Historical Voices from Prison. This will be a dramatic reading of speeches from Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Dr. King, George Jackson, and Angela Davis, with the panel discussion, Banu Baruti, AOUN organization, Clyde Young, the Revolutionary Communist Party, and Dolores Canales. Her son is in the state shu at Pelican Bay. The panel discussion will be followed with a Q&A. And this is a free event. If you have a community event that you would like announced on this show, send the information to Drama Stage Coon Run, 1yahoo.com, care of Earlene Anthony. And at this time, back to our host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Earlene Anthony, with our community calendar. Now we have in the studio two guests, Mr. Isaac Clay, Mr. Lee Shaw, who will be doing some performance at the second half of the show. How you doing, Isaac?
I'm wonderful, Mel.
Okay, Isaac, first of all, how did you, two-part question, how did you get involved with Drama Stage, and what would you be doing performing live in the studio in the second part of the show?
Okay, well, the first part of the question, how did I get involved with Drama Stage Coon Run? Sunji Ali, my late friend who was a good friend of yours also, Sunji was a poet extraordinaire. He was a writer, and he was also a teacher. And we were just joking a little while ago about him trying to do some rap. And Sunji was one who inspired a lot of poets. People who had put their poetry on the side, when they met Sunji, they went back to their poetry. And he kept talking about this guy, Melvin, and Drama Stage Coon Run. And he kept saying, I'm going to introduce you to Melvin one day. I'm going to introduce you to Melvin. Then one day at the a memorial service for Dadisi X, who was also a good friend of ours, you showed up and I introduced myself. And matter of fact, I came down and I saw your place, well, not necessarily your place, but where you did your rehearsals at 6 in San Pedro, Church of the Nazarene. And next thing I know, oh, yeah, you were assigned to direct Sunji's play, Black River Rising. And the thing that really impressed me was the fact that at, I think, 2 days or 2 or 3 days before we did the play, somebody that was supposed to do a role, your role, they dropped out, and you had like, what, 2 days to learn the part, 2-3 days, and I was impressed that you learned that part, and you also directed. And so right after that, we did Nailheads, which was done at the Staples Center at the Clippers game, and I played the singing head, okay, in which I do a little tribute of to Marcus Garvey, which the singing head does tonight. And so that's how we got started, and I was very grateful to you for giving me the role without even auditioning of the role of Marcus Garvey in Catch the Tiger. And I like that name, Catch the Tiger, which you explained to me was J. Edgar Hoover's code name for Marcus Garvey, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So that's how I got started because of Sunji, the late Sunji Ali. And I love what you guys are doing out here for the homeless. And I love the sincerity I see that you give homeless people. One thing you do, Melvin, and I've seen you do this time and time again. I see people come up to you that kind of shabbily dressed and, they look like they're kind of beat up. But I notice you always take the time to look them in the eye and talk to them. I've noticed you do that several times. That touches my heart. That really impresses me because sometimes we go through the motions, but because it's the nice thing to do. And we figure, this is what people do when they're trying to obey God, to walk in Jesus' footsteps. But I see you take your time and go or to the side with them, and you look at them like they're meaningful to you. And I just want to encourage you to keep that up because you never know what a kind word does for a person. Errol, your girl Friday, your main lady, sit right next to you, Miss Erlene. She does the same thing, and she know I have a thing about that scripture book. What is that? Our Daily Bread, right, Miss Erlene? And
yes.
Because I like to read the Word every day, and she goes out her way sometimes to say, "No, when we rehearse at the Church of Nazarene, now I'll look over here for you to see if you have a Daily Bread," and that touches my heart too. I never told you this, Errol, but I love it when you do that. Plus, I love the way she treats people and like the unity you all have.
Now, let me ask you this. Second half of the show, what song are you going to do for?
What song? I'm going to do a tribute to Paul Ropes and do the song that he's known for, Old Man River.
Okay, we'll be back to that second half of the show. Now, other studio guest, Mr. Lee Shaw. And Lee, same question. How did you get involved with Drama Stage? And what is the open mic spoken word piece that you're going to do at the second half of the show?
Well, I got involved with Drama Stage back in January of 2007 and took on a position as an assistant stage manager. And sometime thereafter, I got offered a part in a play called Surviving the Nickel as a security guard. In the same play, I later took the lead role of Malik Morrison. And it's been a blessing after blessing since that particular point. I also was involved in the Marcus Garvey play, Catch the Tiger. I did a few readings, the latest of the last two was Cages and My Mother's Daughter, I think is what it is. But so far it's been good. You know, Drama Stage Crewman has been real good to me.
What is the piece you're going to do for us in the second half, sounding off open mic?
The piece is called Poverty Pimp. Mm-hmm. It kind of lets you know what people are all about. You know, some people have the best intentions starting off, but they do just like most of them do. They go Hollywood on you. And then you know those who they intended to help from the beginning are still lost. They don't have no fighters.
Okay, thank you, Lee. Mr. Lee Shaw. Thank you, Mr. Isaac Clay. Now we're going to go into our host corner. And this is a tape that I did about 5 years ago dealing with Marcus Garvey and J. Edgar Hoover entitled The Forgotten Tribe of Shabazz. So thank you and enjoy The Forgotten Tribe of Shabazz.
because of Nimrod's conquering of the leopard and the development of the art of fortification and Freemasonry, his popularity would continue to increase. Nimrod was able to liberate the people from the fear of wild animals. He would become a figure of immense popularity. He would don the leopard skin, symbolic of his victory over the leopard, and parade before the people. He was on his way to becoming the first super warrior, the first superhero, the first superstar. Nimrod, the mighty hunter, would be worshipped as a god during his lifetime. An entire system of worship would develop around Nimrod. Genesis, the 10th chapter, and reading the first portion of the 7th verse and the 8th verse. And the sons of Cush, Seba, and 8. And Cush beget Nimrod. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson. And the topic of our discussion is the forgotten tribe of Shabazz. Now, in this particular tape, we're going to break down the mystery and secrets surrounding the tribe of Shabazz. The word Shabazz is still a mystery to even a lot of people, even a huge majority of the membership of the Nation of Islam, whom Master Farad introduced the word to them in the early 30s. But I want to talk to you about the real meaning of the word Shabazz, especially since there's so much confusion among the descendants of the slaves of America, those who have converted to the religion of Islam, the revelations of the Prophet Muhammad, and those who follow the Nation of Islam as we trace it through Master Farad and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and of course producing Malcolm X, producing Emma Ward D. Muhammad, producing Minister Farrakhan. But right now, what I want to do, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the forgotten tribe of Shabazz and break down the meaning of it, because this is a very important word now, Shabazz. But it is also a very misunderstood word. When we understand the meaning of the word Shabazz, then the identity of the tribe of Shabazz becomes clear. And but let me read again Genesis, the first part of Genesis, the 10th chapter and the 7th verse that read, and the sons of Cush, Saba, S-A-B-A. That's Genesis, the 10th chapter and the 7th verse. Now in the Quran, this Saba is referred to as Sheba or Saba. And Surah 27, after Ayah 22, and this is the Yusuf Ali translation, and it reads, but the Hoopy tarried not for. He came up and said, I have compassed territory which thou hast not compassed. And I have come to thee from Saba with tidings true. Surah 27, Ayah 22. And then M.H. Shakir's translation reads, and he tarried not long, then said, I comprehend that which which you do not comprehend, and I have brought to you a sure information from Sheba, Surah 27, Ayah 22, the M.H. Shakur translation. So Sheba, Seba, and Saba is the same word. Now, as I mentioned in some of our early discussion, most notably when we talked about Iraq and the repentance of Nineveh, I mentioned to you that Seba is Nimrod, the mighty hunter. And so, and Seba is the same as Shabazz, the same. So Nimrod is Shabazz. If Nimrod is Shabazz, then who is the tribe of Shabazz? The answer to that question is, who or what is the tribe of Nimrod? As I mentioned in Genesis 10:7, Seba is the son of Cush. So the tribe of Nimrod is the tribe of Cush, better known as the Cushite Empire. And keep in mind that the Cushite Empire is interchangeable with the Kemetic Empire. Cush is the son of Kim. And as I mentioned earlier, the word Kim gives us a word chemistry, the esoteric word for scientific knowledge, the esoteric icon for scientific knowledge or technology. All of these words like Kim, Cush, Shabazz, Moor, Misraim, Sudan, Ethos, and many other words are interchangeable with the word black. Now, for a complete discussion on the meaning of these words, see the excellent book by J.A. Rogers that is called Nature Knows No Color Line. So when Master Farad mentioned the tribe of Shabazz, he is talking about Nimrod, the mighty hunter in the Cushite Empire. Now, how do all of this relate to religion or in relationship to the nation of Islam? How do this relate to Islam? Yeah, at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back in history. We're going to talk about a little black history, if you want to call it. I like to call it history. We're going to focus in just for a minute on a few important figures that led up to the development of that particular word, Shabazz. First of all, let's talk about Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. And at the same time, sort of like running parallel, would be Noble Drew Ali and the Moorish Science Temple. When we're talking about the basic time period, we would be talking about 1914, when Noble Drew Ali would move from the South, North Carolina, into New Jersey, and there he would found the Moorish Science Temple, which is a very important organization, very important part of African American history. But the more important and centralized organization was Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. Now, what made this such a very important part of the history of the African Americans, the descendants of the slaves in America, and we're dealing with a lot of these concepts right now, is the individual who would have the first major case of neutralizing Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. And that person was J. Edgar Hoover. J. Edgar Hoover, a very important figure in terms of the development of law enforcement thought here in America. He was the real founder and development of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, known most famous as the FBI. One of the first things that J. Edgar Hoover had to do when they sent him from Washington to New York was to develop some kind of plan to deal with Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. So here's what Hoover did. First thing he did was he took this black middle class doctor who was an enemy of Marcus Garvey. We'll talk about that a little later on. But the most important thing, he took this black doctor and he gave him the code name Confidential Informant Number 800. And he put him inside of the Universal Negro Improvement Association. And because of his education and knowledge, he was able to move up into the inner circle. And he was able to study the movement from the inside, the weaknesses, the strengths, the various fractions, etc. And through this particular study, this particular act, and studying this particular information, Hoover developed the concept that was called infiltration and disinformation. And it had two major steps. He would take an infiltrator, making sure that that infiltrator in the majority of the case would be the same would be the same racial makeup. Not all of the time, but in the majority of the time, as a group that they were planning on infiltrating. This particular infiltrator would study the weaknesses and the strength, find out the different fractions, and through the concept of disinformation, they would split these fractions and cause all kind of internal turmoil to keep these various groups from achieving their major goals. Now, later on, this concept of infiltration and disinformation would become known as the counterintelligence program, better known as COINTELPRO. This is what made Marcus Garvey and the Universal Improvement Association so important for studying the history of this period and finding out exactly what happened. This is when most of the plans was actually put in place that's affecting us right now in the year 2005, right here in October. It was October the 20th, 2005. Now, after J. Edgar Hoover used this methodology to bring down Marcus Garvey and destroy the Universal Negro Improvement Association, as I mentioned, he would perfect this into a technique that would be used in the 60s, most notably against Malcolm X and against Dr. King. Now, what was it really about Minister Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King that made them such a threat to the American ways of life in the eyes of J. Edgar Hoover? To that question is found in a memo by J. Edgar Hoover in response to a discussion about Dr. Martin Luther King. Now, this memo in which J. Edgar Hoover would send around to most of his trusted FBI agents would become known as the Hoover Memo. The memo reads, "To prevent the rise of a messiah who could unify and electrify the militant black nationalist movement, Malcolm X might have been such a messiah. He is a martyr of the movement today. Martin Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, and Elijah Muhammad all aspired to this position. Elijah Muhammad is less a threat because of his age. King could become a very real contender for this position should he abandon his supposed obedience to white liberal doctrine of nonviolence and embrace black nationalism. Now, this was a FBI memorandum that was issued on March the 4th, 1968. And keep it in mind, now just a few weeks after that, up in April, the assassination of Martin Luther King in Memphis. The goal of this memo was to prevent the rise of a black messiah who could unify the black masses, who will never forget his experience with Marcus Garvey and the fear that the Garvey movement caused. This was the foundation for the creation of the underground program that I mentioned called COINTELPRO, whose sole purpose was to neutralize any organization deemed un-American. Both Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King had the potential to duplicate the success of the Marcus Garvey movement. As long as Malcolm X was part of the organizational structure of the Nation of Islam under the control of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he was no threat to duplicate the success of Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association. The same in relationship to Dr. King. As long as Martin Luther King was under the conservative, nonviolent movement of civil rights, he was no threat to duplicate the national and international success of the Marcus Garvey movement. But with the awarding of the Nobel Peace Prize and his opposition to the Vietnam War, this took him, like Malcolm X when he separated from the Nation of Islam, out of the arena of civil rights into the arena of human rights, from the national scene to the international scene. Moved by Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King from the national arena of civil rights to the international arena of human rights, which signed their death.
Okay, now we're going to move into our next section, Voices from the Community section, this subject dealing with the homeless.
Okay, so our first question is, what's the number one challenge in being homeless?
Being David? David Briggs.
David, okay.
Being away from friends and family.
Okay.
Anthony's probably elaborating on it. Uh-huh. Not just friends and family. It's like being homeless, you never know who you're going to wake up next to or what might go on next to you.
Yeah. I think it's unfair. Number one challenge is, my name is Charles Dominic. Number one challenge of being homeless is trying to find employment. It's kind of hard. You don't have a permanent house, and that kind of reflects from your resume to the employers.
How about you?
Oh, I'm Robert Dukes. I think the challenge is finding permanent housing.
Alice here. How do you guys handle your hygiene? Where do you get your hygiene? Or
well, hygiene me, stuff? Anthony, me, I'm on GR, and that helps me get some of my hygiene. Mm-hmm.
Did you go to the missions or any of these service centers down here for hygiene kits or anything like that? Do they give them away?
I haven't heard. This is the first time me hearing them giving away hygiene kits, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh. So you don't, like the Midnight or any of those facilities, do you know if they give away?
You have to be a resident there or signed up with them some kind of way.
So you just can't walk in
off
the street?
You just can't walk in off the street.
That's not too good. What's your experience been like?
I'm on GR also. Sometimes on the weekends, people drive by in trucks or cars and they give away hygiene kits. So I'm there to get my kits.
So what do you guys think about this incident that happened here, I think, in the last 24, 48 hours with the homeless woman on Boyd?
I think she was crazy.
Okay. Have you heard about this incident?
No.
There was a Hispanic woman that was walking with a stroller up Boyd Street through the Toy District, and she had her baby strapped into the stroller. this black woman came up and pulled her out of the stroller and proceeded to fling her around, fling the child around. And then when the police caught up with them, they asked her, well, why did you do this? And her response was, I wanted to eat the baby's arm off.
Wow, I think that was kind of ballistic, really. It was kind of crazy, you know what I'm saying? And see, that's the problem out down here. You working with all peoples from different walks of life, and you never know where they're coming from. You might just say hi, and that might just push a button and have them to turn on you, or, you know, something like that.
And I think that if she wanted to eat the baby arm, I think she should have took the mother, because the mother arm is bigger than the baby.
That's a good one.
She said, though, you're dealing with people down here that have mental problems. And so when you're around them, some are here because they have lost jobs, and some they're sick and so on, but some are just mentally ill. And I think she was more mentally ill than any other. Mm-hmm.
I had that lady come walk up to me and attack me with some scissors after she was shaking somebody down the street, and I was kind of laughing because it looked funny because she's chasing this tall black guy, and I'm laughing. And then she walked over towards me, and I thought maybe he did something to her. So I'm like, are you all right? She goes, yeah, I'm all right.
It's scary down here.
Only with these scissors and stuff. Luckily, I had my guitar on my back, so she hit me. Actually, came from behind. My guitar was on my back.
One of those El Kabong moves, right? Mm-hmm. El Kabong moves.
Yeah, well, she made the mistake of attacking me when I also had my pool stick. So I took that out of the case.
You know, Hindi, you made a lot of good spoken word pieces on LAPD and stuff. What's your opinion or your feelings about this beating in Fullerton in the last few days?
They beat the guy to death?
Yeah.
That's crazy, too.
Yeah, I saw a picture that his father put out there, and I was like, whoa.
That's another Rodney King issue. Rodney King was lucky. This guy wasn't lucky.
They should have learned enough from the Rodney King incident to not just beat somebody to death.
And they should learn that with all the cameras out there and cell phone cameras and stuff, that, you know, somebody's going to get
somebody's gonna yeah, somebody's always going to have this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm from Detroit, and I heard that the LAPD was the most prejudiced police force in the United States.
Closing up.
So you don't have to be black when the beating.
No,
that's true. That's very
true. No color boundaries on that beating thing.
Okay, the last question is, what do you guys think can be done to help solving the homeless problem?
Start opening up housing projects and stuff for people, and don't discriminate because one might had a record from here, which it could be 19 years ago.
Okay. Sorry. Okay. How about you?
I think, like she said, I think they could have more housing projects.
Because, and then they have shelters, but all the shelters are overcrowded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they ought to just label some, but mental people should not be in with regular people.
Yeah.
They should have a place for them.
Right, and they need to get help.
And they need help.
Where somebody can watch them and maintain them.
Yes, exactly.
I know a lot of veterans, they can't be by themselves. So you have to have somebody there to kind of watch them. Because if they don't, they may end up hurting themselves or someone else.
Close the jails down and make shelters for people.
Yeah, and I heard some shelters.
They build in jails, why can't they build shelters?
Right, and some shelters charge, and a lot of people can't afford it, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's up with that? I mean, for years, the union just lets you in, you know, no charge. Now, all of a sudden, because of their budgets, and they just don't have the money anymore.
And then if it's a free shelter, then it's some kind of glitch to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where you might have to go to school, or you might have to work or something and get him your money or whatever.
Right.
And that's so unfair.
Okay. Well, that wraps it up. And what I would like to do is close out by getting everybody's names once more. Your name is?
Robert Dukes.
Robert.
David Briggs.
David.
Antonise Powell.
Charles Dominic.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you. All right.
Okay, our last section for today is a live in studio performance. Starting off with Mr. Isaac Clay. He's going to do a piece for us called Old Man River. Mr. Isaac Clay.
One of the most beautiful musicals of our time came from the prolific pens of Mr. Jerome Kern and Mr. Oscar Hammerstein. And one of the most beautiful songs of our time from that musical was made even more famous than the musical by the late, great Mr. Paul Robeson. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a tribute to Paul Robeson. There's an old man called the Mississippi. That's the old man that I long to be. What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free? Don't look up and don't look down. You don't dare make the rich boss frown. Bend your knees and bow your head and pull that rope until you're dead. Let me go away from the Mississippi. Let me go away from the rich man's farm. Show me that stream called the River Jordan. That's the old stream that I long to cross. Old Man River, that old man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling. He keeps on rolling along. He don't plant us, and he don't plant cotton. And them that plant some is soon forgotten. But old man River, he just keeps rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain. Tote that barge and lift that bill. You get a little drunk and you lands in jail. I get weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living, but scared of dying. But old man River, he just keeps rolling
Hey, Mr. Isaac Clay. Next, we're going to have a sounding off open mic by Mr. Lee Shaw. He's going to do a piece called Poverty Pimps.
Poverty Pimps are the community activists who failed to call out the vampires who suck the life's blood of the community. They might be your friend, but they're still selling dope and overpriced goods, and that's still a sin. Just like the money changers, you suck the life's blood of the community. Think you so cool because you walk with a limp? I know better. You're just a poverty pimp. Using the misery of the community to get what you want, things stay the same while you run your game. Seeking to cause disunity so you can scream. The system is the problem. It's just a dream. Now you act like you don't know what to do. You don't care about the community. You care about you. You are the system because you pimp like the system. Pimping off the misery of the community. Poverty pimps walking with a limp. One foot in Hollywood and the other one in Skid Row. Like we don't know, still playing the master's game, pimping in Skid Row. Poverty pimps, flapping your pants and walking with a limp, showing your behind like a poverty pimp. You all for yourself. You don't care about the rest. You want the worst for the young, not what's best. You all getting caused confusion like the hypocrites do. You don't care about the community. You care about you. Pimping off the misery of the community, selling dreams that turn into nightmares, acting like you care. Leading the people nowhere, the blind leading the blind while the community stays behind. Poverty pimps, sucking the lifeblood of the community without the fancy clothes and car. You're still a poverty pimp. That's what you are.
Poverty Pimps by Mr. Lee Shaw. Next, we have Miss Earlene Anthony. She's going to do a piece from the play. She's going to do a monologue from the play Nailheads, which is a play about the 80 to 100,000 people who sleep on the streets of Los Angeles on any given night. Miss Earlene Anthony.
My name is Otto Head, and I'm a nailhead. My present home is my automobile, my car. I live inside my car with my daughter. She's 13 years old, and I'm a single mom. I never thought it would be like this. I never thought I would be living in my car. I live in my car, but I'm still homeless. I'm just one step from the street, one step from the shelter. I got a college degree, and I used to work in an office, and I made pretty good money, enough to make a down payment on a house in a nice neighborhood, a good environment where my little girl could grow up. Then my house got foreclosed, and I had to move into a smaller apartment. And out of nowhere, they downsized and cut my job. And I looked and looked for work before my unemployment check ran out. My check ran out last month, and the only work I could find was telemarketing, and it was only part-time. I'm trying to hold on, but it's getting hard. Gotta hold on for my little girl. I gotta be strong for her. But for now, my car is my home. I don't want to live in a shelter. I want a place of my own, a place I can call home. It's getting hard out here. There's no telling what's out there waiting for me. I'm trying to hold on, but it's getting hard. My name is Otto Head. I got a little girl, and I live in my car.
Hey, Miss Earlene Anthony, Otto Head from the play Nail Heads. Our next show coming up, we'll be dealing with the subject would be the homeless, and we also will be talking about prison reform. I would like to take this time to extend a special thanks to Jeremy and the Skid Row Studios. And thank you for tuning in to the Coomram Report. And I leave you with the song that opens the show, Colonial Man by Hugh Masekela.